KPFT car, or visit kpft.org to donate your old vehicle to support KPFT. Your contribution is appreciated. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to Fresh Off the Block. The block.
The
2048 block.
The block of rock.
Half K block.
It's the net block.
Communist block.
The other unmentionable block.
The Class C net block.
The Class C block. All right, welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Wow, we've got Peter like right at the beginning.
Yeah.
Perfect show.
I'm impressed.
The perfect show.
So no, the perfect show is when Peter's here.
Aww.
He's here in our hearts. And on Flicted's laptop screen.
That's even better.
Well, good. So we've got everything where it needs to be.
Oh. Oh. No, I'm here. I inadvertently joined twice.
All right.
Same hangout. So I couldn't, I didn't want to sock puppet the show.
That's how dedicated the show is. He's willing to join multiple times.
Is that what it is?
That must be it.
Okay. All right. Well, welcome to the show. We're glad you could tune in. Please feel free to join us in multiple ways. We have the...
join us.
Oh, I have a missed video call.
Join us.
On the geekradio.com. That's the website with all the information. And I do believe we have a Geek Gathering announcement up there for a week from Friday for the Geek Gathering. So we invite you to come out to that. And you can get all the information you need from the website, and you can hang out with us on IRC, irc.cuckoo.com. I said irc.cuckoo.com.
Cuckoo.
And
our soundboard. What's wrong with the soundboard?
The batteries are low.
Beep. Oh, is that beep that happens every, like, 30 seconds when, in the middle of the night?
A smoke detector.
Oh, that's annoying.
And you're trying to figure out where it's coming from.
That's the hardest thing, which one it is.
Which one is it?
30 seconds would be good. Mine are more like 4 or 5 minutes. And it doesn't seem like it's exact. It's more like random. Like, as soon as he stops paying attention, as soon as he gives up, we're going to send another beep. We've broken his will. Beep.
Oh.
What? Where'd that come from?
So, anyway, I was going to say, oh, yeah, irc.cuckoo.com. And the Channel Tech Bytes.
Now it works.
If you don't have your own client, feel free to use our client at geekradio.com. It's the show within a show. And I see that we have a handful of people already in the channel, so that's good. You can call us if you feel like you can contribute to the show and would like to participate at 713-526-5738. Or you can just go to the website and send your questions in via the contact form. And if you wanted to chime in with something, I'm going to be checking email a little bit more regularly. We did have had a good one come in last week that was came in via the website. Okay. I don't know what he's trying to tell us.
I don't know what that means.
I don't understand. Flickton's holding up a sign.
So fiddly.
Is it just something that...
Turn.
They're cue cards for operating the board.
We had a trainee when we came in.
Aww.
I think it's so cute.
It could also be used on a Saturday night, possibly.
Oh, yeah. All right. And, so that's about that and all the good information. Flickton's testing out new apples tonight, trying out some new fruit. He's got a weird look on his face as he's chewing these apples he's not quite certain of.
The sad thing is he treats regular apples just like his Apple computers, and these are all several years old and could be replaced with newer ones, but he won't.
He was saying he did not like these particular apples.
He was. We have, we have our memories as a record.
These apples are making me thirsty.
Well, how do you like them apples? Thank you. I'll be here all night. Please tip your server.
All right. So, Pete, you were going to come in tonight, but you didn't.
Yeah, just ended up. It's one of those where I have to look at the workload right around the time when I need to leave, and then figure out if I can swing it. And tonight could not swing it. Next week, I am that the highest priority will be to come in and do the show in person because it's been too long now.
This is like, it's kind of like Bullwinkle trying to pull a rabbit out of a hat.
Again!
This time for sure.
Nothing up my sleeve. So I have a missed video call, but I don't have an active video call that I can join in the Google Hangout. So somebody invite me.
I'm going to do something. I'm going to join the IRC.
You're going to join the IRC?
Just make sure and mute your... if you're going to join the Hangout, mute your microphone.
I'll do the best I can. No promises.
I'm going to join that IRC.
All right. At any rate, what we're going to do is we're going to hand things over to Peter Hughes, who's not in the studio, and do the Technology Bytes info shot. So as soon as this comes...
There it goes.
Whoa.
Echo. It doesn't let me mute.
Feedback.
That's weird.
We can do the whole show like this.
I'm hitting the mute button and it's not muting.
So much for the perfect show, Jay.
Thanks, Jay.
Oh, I ruined it this time. The secret is not muting it. The secret is turning the volume down on your laptop. That's the secret.
Really? Because I've just muted.
I'm guessing you got to do both.
You got to do both because it's coming. Whatever's coming in over the computer is not just, it's hitting the microphone, mm-hmm. which is right in front of the computer.
But do you have to do both?
Yes.
So someday we'll have one where we just have everybody get on. We'll have everybody get on the Hangout, leave their microphones open, and see what kind of bizarre feedback loop we can create.
Best show ever.
That'll be a really good Saturday night for somebody too.
It'll be the freeform jam version of our show, the Halloween edition.
It reminds me of old, like the Tales from the Blue Box article, the old Esquire article where they're talking about. listening to Captain Crunch, the John Draper, the archetypical phone freaker, link up long-distance switches around the world and call himself from one side of the room to the other side of the room and have the signal travel all the way around the world and hear the echo. That was kind of a long digression. Never mind. Let's move on.
I just find it curious that you brought up John Draper.
Hmm. Yeah. Ask Barrett.
I can introduce you guys.
Oh, you know Captain Crunch?
Yeah, yeah. I bet he would show you whatever you want to know.
Are you into yoga?
No.
He seems like he's kind of a...
He's slightly eccentric.
Okay, that's a great way of putting it, because you got to respect somebody like that and his
very
history
polite
with the
way
technological community and everything he's done.
You know, with the mustache you're sporting nowadays, he would win out in the
youth.
That's
what I'm saying. I think we should take Lee and let him do an interview.
Let's take him to DEF CON and introduce him to Captain Crunch. Yes. And get him a private interview.
Yeah,
set up
in the hotel room, a little alone time.
Am I going to emerge?
No.
Okay, from the hotel room.
All right, we'll just leave that there for now.
Barrett, look at Barrett. He's okay.
I'm okay with this, yeah.
What happens at DEF CON kind of leaks out into everything else. All right, so what we're...
There's no expectation of privacy.
There's no expectation of privacy, especially when it comes to humiliating your friends.
Sigh.
All right, so we're going to go over to San Antonio and do the Technology Bites Info Shot. Take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
All right, our top story is a neat little bit of writing I saw on Ars Technica. Lee Hutchinson, who's here on the show, apparently he wrote about his experience being on Technology Bites, and I quote, I guess this is maybe during an episode, and you can listen for this moment.
Wait a minute. What are you saying about me? What did I do?
I fell into a strange trance-like state, halfway between awake and asleep. Imagine that your entire body, except for your head, is made of mattress foam, like memory foam or something, and it's sliding down an infinitely long tube like a straw or a water slide. Your head is a tiny helium balloon attached to your body with a really long string. And as your body slides down the tube, it's pulling your head along with this long string. You're thudding along the sides of the tube as it twists and turns, and your head is banging into the ceiling.
You know, if you want to talk about my experiences...
Oh, wait, no, that was you taking Ambien.
If you want to talk about my experiences with Ambien on a plane, we don't have to do it during the info shot. I'm happy to talk at length about drinking too much wine and taking Ambien on an international flight.
Oh, I just thought it sounded better as a description of your show experience.
It does feel like that, except Jay kind of leans over your shoulder and his whiskers brush your cheek.
When you wake up, you're not in a foreign country. You're still looking at the same guys in the room.
Yeah.
Oh, that was on the way back from Germany, not back from Colorado.
I was actually on the way to Germany.
Oh.
On the way to Germany, I had a very tight schedule. I had 9 hours of the flight. And I was going to land, and it was going to be 7:30 a.m., and we were going to start immediately with video and interviews. So I had to try to figure out a way to, as hard as I could, sleep on the flight.
Sleep like the wind!
So I slept like the drugged, and it was a fascinating experience. Anyway, so happy to pick this up again post-info shot, if you'd like.
So it was kind of, it was sort of his, the whole Vegas, consulting with your attorney and tearing up hotel rooms and I'm blanking on his name.
Fear and Loathing.
David Lee Roth. Yeah,
Hunter Thompson. Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Hunter S. Thompson.
Yeah. That gonzo technology journalism.
If my journalism career goes even a little bit like Hunter S. Thompson, I don't know if I would have succeeded beyond my wildest dreams or my life would have taken a turn for the, like, really, really bad. Probably somewhere, like, a little bit of both.
Fear and squatting.
Caused an international incident.
Yes.
You started it. No, you...
We can't stop here. This is Gamergate country.
All right, but in the real somewhere, news... Somewhere, somebody's looking up Jay's address right now.
No. Things are looking good for net neutrality. Tomorrow, the Federal Communications Commission will vote on whether to treat the internet more like a public utility. It looks like the fight is winding down. According to the New York Times, key GOP opponents have accepted near certain defeat. On Tuesday, Senator John Thune, the Republican of South Dakota and chairman of the Senate Commerce Committee, all but surrendered on efforts to overturn the coming ruling, conceding Democrats are lining up with President Obama in favor of the FCC. No, you know, I don't know. Maybe they are, but I would put it differently. I would put that politicians are lining up in favor of doing the internet correctly instead of letting, you know, rich companies squeeze out small companies and have the those who pay get in the fast lane and the rest of us ride in the slow lane. Anyways, we will know tomorrow. We'll know that, you know, the details are pretty much out there, but since the vote looks like it's going to happen, that would put in the rules, and you know that would be voting in the rules, and then we can look forward to what happens next, and we'll certainly cover it as it happens and see what you know, see what the twists and turns are. There have been some tweaks on the language to try and make it better. One of the people in on the side of net neutrality wanted some of the wording tightened up, but apparently other than that, there's not big changes. So there's that good news about the latest in technology, and then there was an article, and I recommend you read it. You know, if you're interested in this stuff, quick side story. When I was a kid, way back when in Cub Scouts, so that gives you an idea of how young I was, we took a tour of the air traffic control hub for Kansas City, because one of the kids in the troop was, his dad was an air traffic controller. And, the part that this story from, it's in Wired's, Autopia section, is that apparently the technology that they showed us low those many years ago, like some 40 years ago, is not that different than what they're using today to do air traffic control. Apparently, you know, on September 26, 2014, there was a telecommunications contractor named Brian Howard who had decided to get stoned and kill himself. And as his final gesture, he was going to take out a chunk of the U.S. air traffic control system. So he went into Chicago Center, into the basement, set fire in the electronics bay, sliced cables beneath the floor, and cut his own throat. He didn't succeed because paramedics saved his life. But Chicago Center, which controls air traffic above 10,000 feet for 91,000 square miles of the Midwest, went dark. They had to cancel 6,600 flights, and air traffic was interrupted for 17 days. The guy had wanted to cause trouble, but he hadn't anticipated a disruption of this magnitude. He posted a message to Facebook saying the sabotage should not take a large toll on the airspace, as all comms should be switched to the alt location. It's not clear what alt location Howard was talking about, because there wasn't one. So no backup. That's why it went so far south. They say at any given time around 7,000 aircraft are flying over the United States. For the past 40 years, the same computer system has controlled all that high-altitude traffic, a relic of the 1970s known as HOST. The core system predates the advent of GPS, so HOST uses point-to-point ground-based radar. So basically, your phone, it's kind of like NASA. You know, everybody likes to, hey, you know, my phone's got, you know, more horsepower than the lunar lander or than all of NASA had or whatever. At some point, yeah, well, when you're using your smartphone on a plane with GPS enabled on it, you've got more stuff. You've got hotter data going than the FAA does. Every day thousands of travelers switch their GPS-enabled smartphones to airplane mode while their flights are guided by technology that predates the speak and spell. You know, essentially it's safe. But it's unbelievably inefficient, and apparently the FAA has been working for 11 years to do a collection of upgrades called Next Gen. It will go online. Some of it will go online this spring, 5 years late and $500 million over budget. And so I think it should be interesting to read about it, but this is apparently the let's see, the software, they started developing this software in 2002, and they were going to be done by late 2010, but by 2007, the system was sailing through internal tests, but once installed, it was frighteningly buggy. It would link planes to flight data for the wrong aircraft, and sometimes planes disappeared from screens altogether. So as recently as April 2014, the system crashed at Los Angeles Center when a military U-2 jet entered its airspace. And so its flight plan, you heard about that, where there was a glitch in Los Angeles. Basically, the flight plan of that plane that cruises at 60,000 feet, which is way above where commercial airlines are, crashed, caused a software glitch that overloaded the system. So you might want to read about that if you're interested in software, and especially old stuff. You know, it's one of these where you kind of go, doesn't really make sense that we, you know, look at what's changed in computers since, you know, okay, I'll come a break, since 1990, and yet it didn't start until 2000, and then it's still not working. Google does seem to do better than that. Obviously, you do have to write, the software has to work all the time, and it has to be perfect, but just interesting that we're using 40-year-old software. And then I'll give you the other bad news, and then we'll go to the future, the happy future. One of the things you may have heard last week, and I don't recall that we talked about it on the show, but was the potential hacking of firmware. You know, getting into that lower level. I guess a couple weeks ago we talked about it for hard drives. The thing is that's found is that, you know, it's apparently very easy to hijack firmware to for your very hacking purposes. The USB research of Noel and Jacob Lell showed how they could hide attack code on USB sticks to hijack a computer, alter files, or redirect a user's internet traffic to a malicious site. One of the few companies that makes hacking its firmware difficult is Apple, and the reason is it's a simple thing. Apple digitally signs its firmware and firmware updates for the iPhone. But, of course, hackers don't need to alter the firmware to subvert the iPhone. Instead, said Kostin Rao, head of Kaspersky Lab's global research and analysis team, they could go after firmware in the baseband, which is the component that lets the phone connect to cellular networks. So that's where you hide it in the for an iPhone. But apparently the firmware level, the problem is it's so deep in the systems that if you can hack them, sometimes it's difficult. If you can hack them, though, you have wide open. So what can you do to protect yourself from these firmware security issues? Unfortunately, there's very little, because antivirus products don't scan firmware for malicious code, and doing so is not a simple task. So mostly it's that you have to be able to trust the hardware and chip makers. Hardware and chip makers should design any firmware or firmware updates they distribute to be cryptographically signed. They should also add authentication capability to hardware devices so they can check and verify those signatures. Another protective measure would be to add a write protect switch on the device side to prevent anyone who's unauthorized from flashing the firmware. Another suggestion would be for hardware vendors to give users the ability to easily read their machine's firmware and establish if it has changed since installation. But because of those kinds of things, you know, apparently if everyone started fixing firmware issues right now and security right now, it would probably be fixed on most computers in 5 to 10 years. But that's only if vendors feel pressured from consumers to provide firmware security, and unfortunately right now apparently no one has incentive to start fixing it. So there's a you know, that at some point there has to be kind of that desire for security and people raising that being important for it to happen. And then finally we've talked a little bit over the past few weeks, we've mentioned the Internet of Things, and there's part of one of the problems of the Internet of Things, as you've heard from us, is that it's not exactly sort of like, well, what is it? You know, oh, it's my thermostat talks to the Internet is kind of a very light version. But the cool part is that IBM and chip designer ARM have come up with a starter kit for the Internet of Things, for Internet of Things type devices. They say it can take just 5 minutes to unbox the equipment and start sending readings to online apps. They suggest this will make it easier to test smart home, smart city, and other Internet of Things prototypes. One expert said small startups would be among those who would benefit. The Internet of Things starter kit has two parts, a pre-configured microcontroller development board featuring one of ARM's Cortex M4 processors and a small amount of built-in memory, which is designed to be dedicated to a single task. And then the second piece is a sensor expansion board containing a thermometer to measure temperature, an accelerometer to measure motion, two potentiometers, that's like a rotating dimmer knob. So it does the levels of like a dimmer switch in your house, a buzzer, a small joystick, an LED light that can display that show three different colors, and a rectangle black and white LCD display. These two components fit together and can be attached to the net via an Ethernet cable and to other equipment by USB. It provides a way to take readings about the kit's surrounding environment and the state of physical objects it's attached to. And then if you enter the device's credentials on IBM's website, you can see the data that this Internet of Things device is recording. You can see that in real time. In addition, you can access a variety of tools created by IBM and other firms to analyze the information or funnel it through online programs that in turn control other Internet-connected equipment. One example the firm gave for how this might be used in real life involved using the kit to send information about local conditions to a remote data center, which in turn would send back commands to a smart lighting system made up of Internet-connected bulbs. The more gruesome suggestion was a set of smart mouse traps, connecting mouse traps to the internet, allowing the building's janitor to know which mouse traps had been triggered, snap, and avoid having to check each one in person. So this is right now at the stage of people's imagination. We talked a few weeks ago about the early days of computing, when you had to build your computer yourself. And now the Internet of Things is kind of at that stage. And so people who are interested in this kind of thing, that looks to be the next big opportunity, I think. And so kits like these, it sounds like they haven't set the price yet. It's going to be manufactured by a company called Freescale. It should be somewhere between $50 and $200. So it's kind of in like Arduino territory. The nice part is they've handled the whole connecting to the internet and some of the kind of basic functions. And so, you take it out of the box and you can maybe move forward with your cool new, with internet enabling your coffee maker or whatever other device you can imagine, which is the important part. That's what you do with this, is use it to figure out, to test out or try out or build your own cool new Internet of Things thing. And that's the news. I guess Barrett's sort of the most makery of us. Does that sound like something? I know this is kind of try-by or fly.
It's kind of a lot of marketing speak, and that price point is pretty far north of Arduino country. I also don't necessarily like the cloud.
Connect up to the cloud and the mandatory potentiometer and all those other pieces.
Yeah, the mandatory cloud parts. The deal is Microsoft has Galileo that's out, that's exactly the same thing. They're jumping on the Internet of Things. That's about the same price. TI has announced a $20 IoT board. That's going to be based off their existing Launchpad platforms. That's $20 already. We're looking at like a tenth of the possible price of the other. And then the main thing is, too, you can make great hardware at a good price, but you've got to have the developer and hobbyist communities willing to support it. And Arduino has like 3 or 4 years head start on that. And then you've also got BeagleBoard, which is kind of making inroads into the higher market. So while it's cool, they just have a lot of they've got a lot of ground to make up. So it's one of those things where originally it looks like it was just going to kind of be a VHS Betamax shootout, but a lot of other companies have gotten into it. There's a lot more choice, but really each board comes with its own learning curve and its own way of doing things. So, if you want to recycle code and use a lot of stuff that's already out there, you're going to go to the platforms that have the most of it. And right now that's, for the most part, it's BeagleBoard stuff. And even to a more extent, Raspberry Pi and Arduino. That's kind of the triple threat. Arduino for the really cheap stuff where you don't need a display. Raspberry Pis are kind of that mid-range where you can actually, you know, use, you know, Linux. You can have, you know, a full-on operating system if you want. And then the BeagleBoard, those are, I would say, you know, the most expensive out of everything. And even those are, like, still quite a bit under $100. And those you can, you know, use as an entire computer replacement, yet still have, like, 80 general input and output pins. So it's interesting. I think it's cool that they're doing that. Freescale is an Austin company, too, so that's kind of local in our backyard. So it'll be cool to see where they go. But there's just a lot coming out right now. So for me to, you know, get
the positive side of it is the packaging it up as an Internet of Things kit means that that opens a door for these people who've already been doing it. I haven't seen it packaged that way, I guess, is one of the things to start getting that out there so that, you know, it can be the kind of Radio Shack 1001 electronics gift that you give to your, you know, your niece or nephew.
That
probably
won't
to
go the way
with.
Radio Shack,
that's
though.
That's gift. Not gift.
But, you know, because it seems to me that this is the thing, you know, there's not a lot of things other than, you know, doing a cool website or Tumblr, you know, that's not just sort of using the paths that have already been made, where the Internet of Things looks to me a lot like, say, the Internet did in 94, 95, and it's open to where just regular people who have a clever idea can, you know, play with this and figure out cool ways to, you know, to do something with their data using these types of devices, and especially it sounds like if there's cheaper stuff that does more things, that has more horsepower, that there's a lot more room to make your own deal, as opposed to just the, like, buying the plug adapters and having your smart home that doesn't really work, or that kind of stuff. You know, this ties together sort of the hardware and software, programming and the cool devices, and seems like you said, that's the part where I guess maybe that's where I'm finally seeing something like this gets me a better idea of the Internet of Things concept and makes it a lot more accessible.
Yes.
Please surf in the web.
Although I rack my brain trying to figure out, okay, well, what would I do if I had one of these things? What would I make?
Well, you know, I wanted to throw one thing out there real quick so that people would have an opportunity to go see something like this while it's still alive. And that's, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with the Superfish story, or maybe you're familiar
with
the Superfish
story.
That's
what I'm queuing up.
About Lenovo laptops, including the software that had some real security issues. And so the Internet has, you
spoken.
Know.
Spoken.
The Internet has spoken.
The Internet has spoken. And so if you go to Lenovo.com, you'll see what's... They've got a message up there because their site was hacked by Lee. Will tell us who it was.
It was...
The Internet has taken their marbles and gone home.
It is real down right now, too. Anyone who happened to be listening to this live, not on the podcast, they probably will have fixed it by the time we get the podcast out.
Maybe. It's Lenovo.
If you go to Lenovo.com, earlier today, it was showing a bunch of pictures of like teenagers with emo haircuts, and a link to Lizard Squad hacking group's Twitter account. Right now, if you go to Lenovo.com, you'll see that maybe you wanted to buy a laptop, maybe you wanted to download some drivers for your Lenovo laptop.
Download some spyware.
You're not going to download anything right now because all that's up there is a warning or just a little text notice saying, "The Lenovo site you are attempting to access is currently unavailable due to system maintenance. Please try the site again in a few minutes. We apologize for any inconvenience this may create." Well, it's been like that since before the show. So they're just not having a good day over at Lenovo Central there. Of course, the reason behind this.
What was their transgression?
They have sinned. They have sinned and they must be punished. Now, I mean, the reason behind this, what Lenovo did
because people want to install their own spyware.
That's right. Well, so everybody knows about like crapware, right? You go buy a PC from an OEM, be it Lenovo or, you know, Dell or Acer or just
Packard
about
Bell.
Anybody. Packard Bell. Yeah,
Two cows. No, hold on. Gateway is what
Gateway.
I saw the cow spottiness and I flashed back to the wrong windsock place.
Altair.
Yeah.
I don't think Altair ever made a laptop.
Isn't a white man who also sells speakers?
Altair.
Tandy, TRS-80.
Osborne. Osborne made a portable.
Go buy an Osborne portable.
But the point is you would buy, you know, any computer you buy.
Actually, the Osborne portable was almost certainly spyware free.
Mm-hmm. Sinclair.
Good luck running anything on there. Yeah, they had to run one program.
No, but you buy a computer these days, and if it's Windows-based, it's going to come preloaded with trial versions.
Not as bad as it was, like, late 90s, though, I'd say. I mean, when do you think that hit its peak, I would say? Windows 95.
Early 2000s.
Really? You think it even got worse? I was in the Linux world for a while.
I wonder if PC decrapifier is still a thing.
Anyway, but so OEMs will preload, you know, tons of stuff.
Usually benign, other than trying to get you to buy, the real version.
A lot of it is stuff. A lot of it is demo versions of applications they like. A lot of it, that they've been paid to include. Sometimes it's little bitty, you know, value add, finger quotes, value add applications that end up duplicating operating system functionality, like, badly. And the reason for a lot of these crapware installs is that the margins these companies are dragging on commodity hardware, on these laptops, people are buying are very, very, very thin. And so if, you know, PC OEM X can ink a deal with, you know, Crap Software Incorporated to include Crap Software's software crapper on all of their new laptops, and they get, you know, 0.3 cents for everyone that they include, that might be, you know, enough to help PC manufacturer meet their guidance, because it pushes them over that little bit of limit and gives them a little more. Anyway, there's money in it for the OEMs, and that's why they do it.
When you say OEMs, he's talking about the manufacturers, who make the computers. So, like, your Lenovo's, your Dell computers, things like that.
Put it this way. The money that they might get, this is speculative, but it's informed speculative. The money that they might get from including 10 pieces of crapware on a PC might be equal to the amount of revenue they're getting out of selling you the PC in the first place. So a lot of these companies that make these laptops and sell them to you, such as laptops, it's desktops too, are incentivized to do this. So, okay, coming back from around the bend here.
The necessary bend.
The necessary bend, the level set, as we would say in a telecon from the company I used to work for. Now that we're all level set, so
let's start the synergy.
Let's synergize. Who called this meeting? So last week, a security researcher at Arata Security, and I should know the guy's name because we've been
Bob.
Going. Yeah, we'll call him Bob. No, I think it was Robert Graham. Found and I so forgive me if I'm getting the fellow's name wrong and if he wasn't the one, but as far as I know, he was the guy who did it. Anyway, he discovered that on his Lenovo laptop, there was like weird stuff going on with secured web pages, and he dug into, without taking too much of a detour here into how SSL and HTTPS works, he dug into his laptop's store of root SSL TLS certificates and discovered that one of the pieces of crapware on his laptop, an application called Superfish, had apparently installed a root SSL certificate into his root SSL store, and we can talk about what exactly that means in a second, but this application, this little preloaded piece of crapware, which is supposed to, if I remember right, do something like if you go to a web page that has a picture of a couch on it, you can search visually and find better couches that look like that couch. This piece of crapware was using this false self-signed root certificate and an HTTP proxy to basically man in the middle every secure website that anybody on that computer was going to. Not just for purposes of advertising, but because they had left the whole thing wide open. So the guy would go to his bank website, and the HTTPS certificate he'd see in his browser wouldn't be his bank's certificate. It would be the Superfish man-in-the-middle attack certificate. You'd go to, you know, to Google, to Gmail, to anything, to any website with HTTPS, and the certificate that he would see would be the one that was being provided by this piece of crapware's proxy as it intercepted his SSL connection, stuffed its own certificate in there, and then man-in-the-middled his traffic. So, and it gets worse because apparently the certificate was signed, this root certificate was signed with an insecure key, and it turns out that all of the instances of this crapware used the same key, which meant that anyone on the internet who knew that private key could, in effect, man, could it affect man in the middle? Yeah, they could hijack your browser session. They could man in the middle you. They could snoop on everything that you were doing, and there was absolutely nothing that you could do to detect it because the signed certificate they had that the Superfish application was injecting as part of its HTTP proxy was like cloaking all of the bad stuff. It was facilitating the man in the middle attack. So, okay, the obvious question is, so what the hell is going on? Why was this on there? What is Lenovo thinking? So this exploded all over the internet last week. Lenovo immediately backpedaled, and they said they issued a whole bunch of different statements, and the statements are ongoing. But Lenovo's response basically was like, oh man, we are so sorry. We check everything that we preload. Apparently, we didn't check this one good enough. We've terminated our relationship with this particular vendor. We're going to write an uninstall tool. We're going to facilitate getting this off of all of our laptops.
Wasn't originally, like, before they said that?
Right.
They were kind of like,
first
it's cool, and we only had it on there for a little while.
They said, this was installed for a limited time, and this attack that you guys are all worried about, this is only theoretical. We haven't heard of any instances of this actually happening. So then security researchers demonstrated it happening. And they were like, oh, you haven't? Well, let me do it. Here it is. Now I've done it. Is it theoretical? And so Lenovo continued to alter their statement.
There was a lot of discussion in the community right about this time. It was Lenovo, are they evil or are they just pure up incompetent?
Right.
Yeah, because no one was really knowing. It got really fuzzy. It's like, wow, are they just like brilliantly evil or are they just they just don't know any better?
Well,
I think it's case two.
The other side of it, though, is this company, Superfish. And this is a company out of California. They've got like five or six major investors. You can look them up on Crunchbase and see who's feeding VC into them. They are apparently, at least in their words, a legitimate company that has built this visual search tool that happens to include as part of it an HTTP proxy that man in the middles everything that you do. Now they didn't,
because they have to see the content.
They didn't build the proxy. They licensed it from another company, an Israeli company called Komodo, I believe is the name of the company.
Komodo?
It's not Komodo.
I misread that. I was like, oh wow,
no,
okay.
It's Komodo. Yeah,
with a K, not a C.
I think
Komodo.
It ends in an A.
Komodo.
I thought it was Komodia.
And that company specifically licenses this SSL proxying hijacking software, and you can go buy it, and it's actually turned up in several other applications too.
Komodia.
Yeah, Komodia. There you go.
Okay.
Like a commode, dia. So anyway,
toilet day.
Do you have a commode, bro?
Usually at least once a day.
Please do before coming into the show.
And so this company, Superfish, that made this application, they took the opposite approach from Lenovo. Lenovo realized that, we've probably need to, back off here and apologize. Superfish has totally doubled down on this, and they're like, no, our application is legitimate.
Well,
nothing that we do is wrong.
Their first response was incredible because
security researchers were lying. Well, they said this is false information being perpetrated by the security community.
Yeah, but what they claimed was, they said it was false information, but it's like they hadn't listened to what anybody was saying. It's like they just got part of something and just lashed out. Yeah. Because what they said was, they're all wrong. Ours does not collect information. It does not distribute it to anybody else, which is what nobody was saying.
Yeah. No one's saying is like spying.
They were denying stuff they weren't even being accused
of. Exactly.
They're saying that your application, I mean, the end result here is this application leaves, because it's probably still on some people's computers, an enormous, very easily exploitable security hole that can be used to, without leaving any traces, spy and peek into HTTPS sessions on any laptop where it's installed, period. That's what it does. And that's enormous because, that's people's banking, that's people's work, that's everything. That's terrible. So Lenovo is helping to remove it on laptops where it was installed, and it was installed on a pretty wide range of Lenovo's consumer laptops that were sold probably between October of last year and January of this year, not on their business stuff. But this poor little company, well, they're poor little company, this crazy little company, Superfish, and their crazy denials. There was actually a reporter from, it might have been Mashable, it might not have been, I know I read this on Thursday or Friday, tried to go by their office, and like everything was
closed.
Oh, right,
you would think that they would be scrambling around trying to
there was no one there.
They were just gone.
It was empty. Probably because they're trying to, because the press has grabbed this with both jaws and is shaking it to death. I mean, the company, if you go look it up, if you go Google Superfish, it's like Superfish malware, Superfish spyware.
Mainly because it's got the name. I think it really comes
name
down
their
to if
product
it has
a, yeah. Fish.
Well, the best joke I heard was someone on the Ars forums posted this. So Lenovo said that they did into Superfish. They said that before we installed it, we did research and tried to test the product out, and we must have missed this vulnerability. And so one of the users on the Ars forum posted that, well, it sounds like their research was sunglasses superficial.
Although one of the things in
the
reading up on this, companies like LavaSoft, Adaware,
yes,
and Komodo Security have used the same. They used the Komodia hijacker.
Yes,
they added it in. It's about bundling ads, and you know, it's about getting ads on to show ads to people. But essentially, that means they just like totally corrupted the security of the machines that their software would run on.
Well, yeah, it sounded like it was supposed to replace
there's
the original ads with the ads that they wanted
you
to
see. That's exactly what they wanted to do. Well, that, and they also wanted to be able to...
Which is still fishy.
They wanted to be able to dig into encrypted web sessions. Like, if you're on an encrypted web page and you're like, I like that couch. I want to buy a couch like that. You could click on the couch. This is how Superfish's application works. It's a visual search. And so if the page is encrypted, their application wouldn't be able to... Like
can't
see into
see,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they wanted to be able to do that. So that's their rationale. So the important thing to remember here is that this idea of proxying encrypted connections has legitimate uses. This is not just something like that is absolutely evil without cause. Antivirus applications do this to be able to peek into your encrypted stream as you download files and stuff and be able to scan them live. Parental control applications sometimes need to be able to do this if you are the kind of person who feels that parental control applications are moral, which I don't, but whatever. I don't have kids, so it's not really my problem. There are legitimate uses for this kind of snooping into the network stack. The egregiously, horribly bad problem here is that this particular way, this particular application, this Komodia SSL snooping thing, used the same easily crackable private key. Thus, they didn't just set up like a way for their application to peek in. They set up a way for the entire universe to peek in to every instance of their application that's out there.
And that's the main issue, is that, and this is, you know, a lot of the stuff the NSA is doing, a lot of the backdoors that they could be building into stuff, is that, you know, just because someone builds something for their use doesn't mean that everyone else isn't going to use it too. So you weaken a product in one way, that's just, you know, that's a weak door for anyone else, any other zombie that's just wandering around that wants to come on in, to come on in.
Now
there's a test out there, actually. There's a badfish test that you can go. That's Filippo, I forget his last name, but if you Google badfish and then Filippo, like Filippo, you'll actually get to his website, and you just more or less turn on, if you've got any JavaScript blockers, turn those off, reload the page, and then follow the instructions, and it'll tell you if you've got that cert loaded up in your chain or not.
So, and this is what Lenovo did to piss off the hacker group, and that's why their website is currently down. Now, important takeaway to any Technology Bytes listeners who are out there, are live or on the podcast, if you do happen to have a Lenovo laptop, now would be a great time, if it's one that you purchased within the past 6 months or so, to check and see if you have this application installed. Once Lenovo's website comes back, they do have a removal tool that you can download that will get rid of it. I believe that we looked at their tool. Peter Bright, one of my Windows guy, I believe, looked at it, and it is legit. It does, in fact, pull the bad certificate and the proxy off. But if you've got a Lenovo laptop that you bought within the past 6 months, you might want to check and make sure that you don't have this thing installed, because if you do, you need to get rid of it ASAFP.
Or if you're, you know, for future people who are more paranoid than that, who want to be more secure, when you get a new laptop, install the operating system fresh from scratch from something from media that yeah, you know is
unfortunately
it doesn't have the crapware.
Truly paranoid people know that there's already stuff in the BIOS and the disk firmware, and you know it's
well
it's
you know
all...
that's a legit question though. Like, what do you do? And most of the times, you buy a laptop from a Lenovo or an Acer or a Dell or whatever. How do you reinstall the operating system from scratch? All you get is a reinstall partition with an image in there that just re-puts all of the factory crapware back on.
Right.
Well, yeah. The Linux community.
Yes.
Doesn't
okay,
have to worry
yeah,
about that.
You could
insert
that.
Snarky
well,
comment here.
There was
DSP
a lot of, there was a lot.
You.
I don't know OS how many 10. Times Get a Mac was tweeted on the day that the
pretty
story
much.
Broke, but you know,
well,
it is.
That, they have their issues too.
Well, you know, there's, you know, this is one of the most egregious things to happen in terms of pre-installed software to come out in terms of something that rises above the level.
It
of
has
this
real
kind of,
world effect.
Right.
It can really take someone down.
And it
know?
Appears to be it appears to have been perpetrated with an absolute and total either lack of understanding or just outright lack of caring. One of the two.
I think it was ignorance. Yeah. Hopefully.
Well, I saw an article that had the evil versus incompetence ratings, and they gave Lenovo a 2 out of 5 on evil. And a 6 out of 5 on incompetence.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Now
and
there
then
is...
the Superfish guy got that their company got I think 11 out of 5 on evil.
Or was that
and,
incompetence?
You know, you just eventually the scale was just totally wrecked. The guy, the Commodia guy, it sounds like was just he was a programmer who wanted to do a particular thing and didn't think big enough to figure out what that he was really compromising all security. You know, like Lee said, there's legitimate things that you could that you would be doing this for, but he didn't think about that. He didn't think about alternate ways to use it. So he had very high on the incompetence and lower on the evil scale. But of course, he sold the code around, and people who did know what to do with it took it and used it. You know.
Yes. Now there is a there's a side conversation to have here, and it's actually the it's actually a much bigger conversation than just PC crapware and people who install HTTP proxies or whatever. As the story was breaking, I was seeing people asking this on Twitter and on the Ars Technica forums and on other tech website forums too. People were saying, well, man, this inspired me to real quick crack open my root certificate store in Windows or on my Mac or whatever and look and see. And I saw all these root certificates in here. I don't know what these are. I don't know if I can trust any of these. How do I know which of these are good and which of these are bad? And and the answer to that is you don't.
Yeah,
this
there are
is
tons
this is
of
exposing
them.
A well, exposing is not the right word. This is bringing to wide attention one of the just one of the biggest, scariest elephants in the room about the modern web and HTTPS and SSL and TLS and the root certificate system that underpins the security of modern web communication is that it is based around, at a certain point, absolute trust of a well, it's not really even a small number anymore, absolute trust of a certain number of root entities. And these are the entities that provide the root certificates that are used to then, in the big sort of spreading spiderweb tree, sign all of the certificates that everybody uses.
And
the
that's
big
not
thing
such a
can't...
big deal. The big it's political now to get the root certificates inside the browser.
But the other
is,
thing
yeah.
is that there are a lot of root certificates that are in there, and they're not necessarily the company that their root
no.
certs for aren't the name of the root cert mm-hmm. because. What's happened over the years is small companies have managed to get root certs in there, and then they've gone out of business. And then somebody buys that company's assets,
yeah.
and now they
yeah.
have a root cert.
And mm-hmm. governments are in there. There are some governments have certificate authorities. Certificate authorities that have in the past been perfectly trustworthy have done bad things. Certificate authorities like Komodo have been hacked and had their stuff stolen and their certificates used to sign fraudulent other certificates. I mean, that it's really kind of – I mean, to me, it's a freaky question. Like, how do I know – what all of these root certs are, who these entities are, and why should I trust them? Well, you kind of have to trust them, because if you don't, if you go in there and start yanking them out, like, I don't know who this one is, I'm going to pull this out. Well, 2,000 websites that was used to sign may no longer work
well,
for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, so if you look
ones.
In there and you go like, What's this user trust? I don't trust. That's stupid. That's Komodo, actually.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stuff signed by Komodo.
It's one of those deals where, like, you know, now that you know what the Matrix is, Neo, and like you have to throw up and pass out because it's actually kind of terrifying when you pull the curtain back. Terrifying maybe isn't the right word. It's eye-opening when you realize that core systems like this have such a shaky underpinning that everyone just sort of has to accept because the example that I gave, to pull an example from popular culture, I tweeted about this the other day. It's like the scene in Men in Black when Will Smith turns to Tommy Lee Jones and he's like, they've just found out that there's a giant alien warship about to blow up Earth. And Will Smith is like, oh my God, Tommy Lee Jones, there's a giant alien warship about to blow up Earth. We've got to do something about this. Why aren't we doing something? And Tommy Lee Jones is like, there's always a giant alien warship about to blow up Earth. There's always one there, and our job is to make sure that people don't know about it so that life can be normal. Well, this is one of those things. You go in there and start looking at the systems that make the modern web work, and a lot of them come from an earlier age where trust was easy to come by. And
it was implicit. No one thought, yeah, everything was built from the ground up in order to share. And it's very Stallman-esque, you know, early on, and it wasn't until it got commercialized that people really started up.
Well, and if you don't have a central system,
follow it back down towards the root. The problem with Superfish is that they were compromising the security that was outside of your computer by being in at the operating system level of your computer.
It's just all – and then you look at what the alternatives are. The alternatives are just as scary. If you don't have a centralized root system, you have a distributed trust system, and that's only as valuable as the effort you put into verifying. And like I said, we could have a whole other conversation about this and all the terrifying ways in which everything is broken and everything is terrible. And
next month, when everybody rolls out DNSSEC, it'll all work.
Oh, yeah.
Hasn't that always been – isn't that kind of the legacy of the modern computer is that – the technology was rolled out and adopted by mainstream culture before it was not ready for prime time.
It was ready for the geeks who wrote it, and it worked great in that context.
Right, but when it was adopted by the masses, and the masses responded in a way that I think also drove some of this, is they said, well, I don't understand why this doesn't work more easily, or why is it, you know, why does it always crash? And so people look for ways to kind of shore it up and make it, you know, a little smoother, but without paying attention to the underlying needs of security and reliability and things like that. And the consumers drove that. They said, you know, you buy a toaster and it just works. It makes toast. It doesn't steal your personal identity and give it to the Russians.
But wouldn't it be great if my toaster was on the internet?
The Internet of Things, yeah.
The
thing about it is, though, you know, I don't know. The consumers, some of it is they're generally, you know, and by they, I also mean I, I'm on large numbers of things are pretty much ignorant. I think one of the problems is that, you know, look at like email. Oh, is that the music?
It is the music.
It is the music. Wait, hold that thought, Peter.
Peter,
there is an echo in here.
All right, well, we're going to take a short station break. We're going to come back to this conversation. I think it's a good conversation. We welcome you to hang around, listen to these PSAs, and join us for the second hour of Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's
Rubehouse.
We'll be right back.
Join KPFT at a free screening of Shadows of Liberty, a documentary by filmmaker Jean-Philippe Tremblay. Shadows of Liberty takes you on a journey through the darker corridors of the American media landscape, where global conglomerates call the shots. Renowned journalists, activists, and academics such as Danny Glover, Dan Rather, Amy Goodman, Daniel Ellsberg, Dick Gregory, Chris Hedges, and many more give insider accounts of a broken media system. Controversial news reports are suppressed, people are censored for speaking out, and lives are shattered as the arena for public expression is turned into a private profit zone. Shadows of Liberty will be shown on Friday, March 6th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Universalist Church, 5200 Fannin Street. Admission is free. Donations are gratefully accepted. There will be a panel discussion afterwards. KPFT, Houston.
I'm V. Patel, Vice Chair of the KPFT Local Station Board.
And I'm KPFT General Manager Dwayne Bradley, an ex officio member of the KPFT Local Station Board.
This announcement is about a vacancy on the local station board.
Interested KPFT members should submit a letter of interest and have a willingness to attend the March 11th LSB meeting, during which candidates can speak to their qualifications.
Your application should consist of a short bio and your ideas to assist the board in accomplishing its duties.
Please drop a short note with some of the reasons for your interest in joining the board, along with some of your qualifications and background, to lsb@kpft.org.
Visit kpft.org for more information about the LSB.
Submission of interest by KPFT members should be emailed no later than March 4th, please. Thanks for supporting your local community radio station, KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Do we have a Barrett time?
Is that who we're listening to?
I will have a Barrett time when Peter gets to the studio.
Oh,
shots
on
fired!
Me.
Shots
no,
fired!
No, I know. I'm just understanding that. I think I lost my Barrett time in Bullwinkle's hat. It's in there somewhere. But next time,
for
I'm going to
sure.
pull it out for
again?
Sure.
You don't have a Barrett time.
I got here to the studio later than Flick did today.
You have been a little lax in your arrivals.
Not lax. I've been overzealous on my work activities, I suppose. But yeah, I've been coming in straight. Yeah, I used to have a little bit of a downtime, bit of time to write Barrett time, but it's not been
your
working
level
out,
of
so
commitment.
I'm going to do Barrett time.
I find
on
your
Tuesday
lack of Barrett time disturbing.
I'm sorry, we're going to have to cut your pay. Your next check will be deducted.
Your next check will reflect.
Divide by zero error.
A petunium chip. All right.
Well, Pete was
before
saying
we went, the thing I was going to say is, you know, that part of the problem seems to be that we jumped from, which is, it's odd since it was a DARPA project, we jumped from this kind of hobbyist, put it together, you know, can you make it work system, which is, that's what the internet kind of is. And they never, before it got that big, they never looked at, oh, well, how do you secure this? So you look at email, and the deal was, of course, you know, of course your email trusted, you know, Bob's email server, because there's only 10 of them currently on the network.
Of course my
I trust
vax
every
trusts
one of
your
them,
vax.
So,
all of our vaxes know. Are friends.
Well,
who
first
would lie
of...
about their domain name? You know, who would fake their, who would fake who it was from? You know, the geeks were a little bit too trusting of human nature.
Well, isn't so much trust. I mean, with anything, the first thing that you do when you've got innovation is you want to get it out there and you want to show it. It's like, hey, we can get a message from here to there. We can get data from here to there. And that was amazing. No one thinks like, hey, let's wait till we secure this to show the world. No, it was like a really exciting time and people wanted to get that out there. No one really thought it was academics and intellectuals for a long time. No one really thought that the bad guys would show up at the party and just kind of ruin everything.
Although
Al Gore invited
the odd part,
way
though,
too
is
many...
that the same geeks who kind of hacked together that stuff to make it work, they also are the kind of guys who, for a joke on somebody or for fun, would come up with some of the things that we would call hacks. I mean, there's a reason that hacker is kind of a gray term. It can go either direction because that's the people who do that and the skills that they have can go either direction.
Yeah, I think we've talked about that in the past. I mean, that kind of came out. I don't know the exact etymology, but I know that some of the first stuff was out of MIT when they would say, like, hey, that was a great hack. And it was just, you know, in the spirit of deep knowledge into something and then, you know, taking something and bending it against its, you know, original intended uses or what have you. So a lot of jokes. Like, I think even, you know, to go back to the J.R. Tolkien thing, I think one of the main engineering college has a dome and a ring around the bottom of the dome. And I think right after the books came out, they actually turned the base of the ring into the One Ring, into Sauron's ring. And that kind of started a tradition there. So, yeah, and it's odd, too. I think the U.S. is really the only place, and it's probably because of our media, that hacker is kind of a gray term or even a dark term. Everywhere else, you know, you go to Germany, you go to Europe, other parts of the world. Hacker still kind of means, you know, someone that experiments with technology, and maybe they don't know everything about it that they're doing, but they kind of muddle their way through.
What do they call the guys then in Russia and Eastern Europe that are powering all these, you know, billion-dollar bank heists?
Yeah, unlucky. I just saw someone put like a $3 million, not someone, our government put a $3 million bounty on a Russian hacker's head, the guy that was responsible for breaking into a lot of the banks. So yeah, we're starting to put pressure on other countries to extradite these guys that used to be out of arm's reach. So we'll see what happens. Although we haven't had much luck getting Kim.com or Snowden back. So we'll see how that works.
Snowden.
Yeah, ooh, and well, I don't Kim like Commando's yeah. still out there.
Can we talk pop culture for a second? I didn't see very much. There are two things that happened this last week in pop culture, which is why I don't pay attention to pop culture. The first thing is Bill Nye was giving you the science guy was giving an interview about more or less Americans' science knowledge, and he said like, hey, we have good scientists. You know, we've got people that came out of, you know, MIT and Harvard and whatever, but I think that there are a lot of science illiterates, like people that write software and farmers. More or less is what he said.
Bill Nye's an idiot.
Did you? Yeah. I mean, that's why I was like, come on, really? So more or less what he's saying is that software developers are about as scientifically literate as, you know, farmers from the 1600s.
Bill Nye is an idiot.
But he's the science guy.
Yeah, but he's not.
He knows how to tie a bow tie.
So I did some digging, and it turns out he does not have a real science degree. He's got an engineering degree. Now, he did go to an Ivy League, but he also hasn't been a practicing engineer in 20 years. He's more of a personality. So, not to, you know, talk bad about the guy, but I now take whatever he says on the same level as I do like celebrity opinions.
I'm perfectly
on the news.
Willing to talk bad about Bill Nye.
Okay.
Because
do you know other stuff?
He said, well, it all goes back to the not really interview, but monologue he did on Big Think like a year or two ago. And it really just it really rubbed me the wrong way, because regardless of what your personal religious beliefs are or aren't, He kind of pitches himself in that kind of like skeptic, modern scientist. Like, we don't need anything but science to give us the truth, and whatever, that's fine. But the thing is, it's like he specifically, like Neil deGrasse Tyson, I'm fine with him. But yeah, Bill Nye is kind of like the bulldog. He's kind of like Darwin's bulldog.
I hear that
right?
One time Bill Nye punched out an old lady. I don't know if it's true. I don't know if it's true, but I might have heard it.
Well, but so the thing is, you know, he tries to, like everybody else in that group, say all we need is logic, and all we need is logic and the search for truth. But then he goes on in this specific thing that, this 8-minute monologue he did or whatever, to basically say that America is falling apart and losing everything because there's these people that are people that believe in religion and that believe in young earth and that they can't function. And that, you know, everything's just getting destroyed, which that's just not logically is not true, because that's the history of the United States. Like it or not, you can't change the fact that there are a lot of religious people throughout history in the United States. And how we got to where we are now seems impossible from his perspective, because he thinks that how things are now is all falling apart. But anyway,
yeah,
there were numerous things.
A little
things.
Bit to his defense, though, is there's a politician out of Georgia who is also a doctor, a gynecologist, and he gave a speech, and it got on YouTube.
Oh, the guy about swallowing a camera?
No, oh no, that guy, oh, that's worse.
That was just,
but,
hopefully
that
he
guy,
wasn't a doctor.
I don't know that guy can't be a gynecologist. Yeah. No, there's a guy from Georgia, he's a doctor. And he said that there's the video of him saying that all the stuff that he was taught about evolution and embryology and all of that was all a lie, and that the Bible is true. And hearing someone say that, who is in a position of political power and who is trading on their education, I can see where that might set off. So,
yeah,
there's a difference between
science and religion.
Yeah,
and there's
yeah.
a difference between being a gynecologist and being a astrophysicist.
Senator?
Yeah, I mean, you.
But if you're both, and
yeah,
you're
but,
saying this stuff.
Yeah, but
you know, the idea though is like, if you had a computer programmer who said that, you know, yeah, all the stuff I learned about coding, well, I've given that all up, and I'm using the philosophy of whatever to do it instead.
There are guys that do switch over to Visual Basic.
I'm not hiring you.
But if you believe the Earth is 6,000 years old, and you're a gynecologist, how is that going to affect your job?
It's not. Embryology isn't correct.
As an engineer,
then how are you going to be a doctor who can work with pregnant women? Because, I mean, he went farther than that. He said evolution didn't exist, that embryology, that all the things he'd been taught about embryology was incorrect.
This is getting
and
heavy,
it's like,
guys.
What? You know, is it the breath of God that made this woman pregnant? And
let's get back to hitting on Bill Nye.
How do you help him with stuff?
Yeah,
you
let's
know?
Make fun of Lenovo some
so
more.
So here's what Bill Nye actually said. He said, we have this top tier of scientists in the U.S., the people who graduated from Stanford and Berkeley and MIT and Cornell. These people are still exceptional and really good. He's talking about science literacy. But he says, we've got this enormous gap between that and just regular software writers and farmers and people that need to be scientifically literate.
And, the downside of his thing is that the problem, the big problem with Bill Nye's thing, the problem I have with it that agrees with you, Flicked, is basically what he's saying then is the new priests of the Temple of Syrinx are people who went to MIT. When they tell you something, you have to take
it. He's an elitist.
What's the scientific term for elitism?
Elitism?
That's it. Okay.
He's an elitist. I mean, because the thing is, okay, 150 years ago, how many people in America were highly educated about science?
I was.
He would probably say pseudoscience, but you know what scientists were doing in the 20s and 30s in the U.S.? They were talking about eugenics and how cool that was, because that was popular all over the world. It wasn't just, you know, the Germans that were thinking that.
Did you just Godwin our entire
show? I did.
Yep.
You Godwin'd the show.
I didn't exactly, though, because I didn't actually say the word.
You're taking it there.
I just implied it.
Carefully. Yeah, careful. Right. Everyone right. Just Google Godwin, Principle Godwin Law, and let's
Godwin,
that.
All right. I think that, you know, this whole thing with science versus religion that is amplified right now through social media and then the internet. I think the whole issue is that all the voices, because of technology, are being amplified. So there's a lot of stupid.
Well, there's also a lot of, in my opinion, there's a lot of lack of any kind of respect. But from the super, super pumped up religious people and from the super pumped up skeptics or scientists, they both feel like the other side doesn't deserve any respect. So they don't treat them with any respect, and they do things because of technology. They do things that in the past they would have said in their home to their friends, where five people would have heard them. Right. Instead, now they say it on the internet, where millions of people can see it, and so it's very public. And so all these private conversations that in the past that wouldn't have, ruffled feathers around the world suddenly are now.
Yes. Maybe we should stop talking about religion talk about politics.
You said you had two
Yeah, that's what I was
going to
say. So the other thing, so I saw that, and then I'm usually a really big fan, and I don't want to blame the guy, because I think I like Neil Patrick Harris. He's pretty cool, the stuff that I've seen. But I would hang out with him. I did see this one little clip from the Oscars, and apparently he made a Snowden joke, and I forgot what it was, but he was supposed to say something about reason, but instead he said treason. He said something about, because there was the Snowden documentary won a Best Picture. He said, you know, he couldn't be here with us tonight for some treason instead of for some reason. And I was like, that's kind of funny. But at the same time, that's kind of it. Well, so was he trying to make a joke? Is he making a pun? Or is that a political statement? And then it wasn't too long after, maybe a handful of hours after, Snowden showed up on a Reddit AMA. And said, what did he say? More or less, he said he thought NPH was funny, and he just kind
of chuckled. I would assume he's making a joke.
He opened the Oscars by saying, as we gather with Hollywood's best and whitest.
Yeah. Oh, here we
so
go.
I think the tone was a little snarky for the evening, and he was going for that type.
Although
of tone.
The Oscars were extremely white, you know, as far as you know, as far as the awards that were up and the people you know that were nominated, and
because Wes
that
Anderson
kind of
is pretty pale.
Yeah. You know, I'm pacing myself. So there's that. So there is some truth to that, but it also kind of leads, you know, the fact that maybe there's some truth that Snowden, you know, is a, you know.
Well, and you get into a lot of, there's a lot of low information.
Here's what Snowden said, though.
I'm going to
take all my guidance from the Oscars on how to interact with my world.
So Snowden came out when they asked about, like, hey, what do you think about NPH's joke? He said, to be honest, and actually they asked him, what do you think about Neil Patrick Harris's joke? And he said, to be honest, I laughed at NPH. So he dropped the NPH. Said, I don't think it was meant to be a political statement, but even if it was, that's not so bad. My perspective is that you're not willing to be called a few names to help out your country, you don't care enough. So not a bad way to respond.
I mean, he had to get something that rhymed with reason, so.
Yeah. Limited options.
Couldn't say, like, you know, he couldn't be here for some particular Patriot.
Friesen?
Jackie Gleason.
I guess he could have said, for a very patriotic treason.
There you go. He could have spun it differently. Not as punchy, you're right.
I feel like I'm monitoring Twitter during the Oscars or something here.
Oh, there's one really cool thing that did come around. Can we talk about one more thing that
sure,
I paid
Barrett,
attention to
this
weekend?
Sure, Barrett. This is kind of Barrett time. We could have put this together.
This is cool. So, you know, everyone's kind of...
Hey, Barrett, what do you think?
So I've got a couple of friends, and I'm going to butcher a couple of these lines, and you can look it up. But I've got a couple of friends in Italy from being over there. And I guess about a week ago, ISIS, you know, the Islamic State, started doing rumblings, and they said, hey, you know what? We're going to go to Rome. Have you guys seen this?
Yes.
So ISIS, you know, gets together and they get a Twitter account going and they take to social media, and the plan is, hey, we're just gonna, and again, there's, you know, we don't know if this is the official quote unquote Islamic State or what, but some members of ISIS said, hey, let's get a Twitter account and then let's threaten Rome. So more or less they had a
what
hashtag.
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, they had a hashtag, and it instead of, I think they meant to say, we are coming to Rome, it's we are coming O Rome. So already they start out with one typo. They started doing all this. They put out, like, videos. And this is, you know, on the heels of, you know, I think there were, like, 26 Christians beheaded just a week or two ago, just, you know, not very far south of there. And if you look at, you know, where Rome's situated, that threat's not very far away. You know, as far as us, all this is happening, you know, across an ocean. But for the Romans, it's just 100, you know, miles south of where they are. So all this kind of pops up, and the Italians taking it in stride. Oh, and this is the other thing. And then right after that, right after they had we are coming, O Rome, they also said more or less, we are coming to pizza, not P-I-S-A, pizza. We're coming to pizza where we will throw all of your homosexuals off the tower. So they said this. So apparently ISIS also doesn't like homosexuals. And this is
or pizza.
Yeah. No, like, I
no
can
they
think
like
of a
pizza.
Lot better,
they were coming to pizza.
I can think of better toppings to, you know, for pizza than homosexuals, but that's just personal preference.
Well, but so, they at least know that you get good pizza in Rome, apparently.
No, no, that is good. So that, and that's what's been so awesome. Is so there's one guy that I know, and he's like, hey, you know, good luck throwing any gay men off the tower in Pisa. You know, we're all here in London. true. And then there were also, someone posted a traffic of, posted a picture of traffic going into Rome, and you know, they said, are you sure? Are you sure you're coming? And then I was, you know, and then it evolved into people giving them, you know, restaurant tips, travel advice, like stay off the ring road, don't take the trains, the trains are always late. You know, Alitalia,
too late, the soccer fans were already
oh yeah
here.
It was great. Alitalia will not let you board if you're wearing last year's camouflage.
Don't eat the prosciutto.
Yeah, yeah. And then someone else was, have you seen our grandmothers? And it's, you know, this little old Italian lady flipping off, you know, someone. Oh, and of course the Sparta, all the Spartacus, you know, the Sparta references.
Is this Sparta?
Yes. This so it's pretty awesome. I think if you go and search for the hashtag we are coming O Rome, it has gone from militant, you know, ISIS stuff to just pure out Rome has won the internet for the week, pretty much.
It, given the, you know, social media component of ISIS, I mean, they really, that's really obviously the military things they've done on the ground have gotten them a lot of credibility, but their exposure worldwide has been totally from social media. You know, I haven't watched any of those horrible beheading videos, but the videos have a purpose and they served that purpose and it did what they wanted. The tough part is, yeah, what happens when your religious jihad thing runs up against internet snark? And at some point, you wonder that then it undercuts their message, which is a good thing. But you know, it's all out there.
They're just going to behead the internet.
Uh-oh,
oh my God!
Got
ISIS
Peter.
Got Peter.
No, Jay. That was Jay.
I'm conserving battery now. I had to jump out of the.
They're in the room.
You're not reading it right.
ISIS, well, what you did there.
Hey!
The tough thing is all the automated corporate social media stuff. After ISIS said they were going to Rome, you know, the Disney at Disney said, you know, why wouldn't you go to Disney World? And McDonald's said,
ideas.
We're loving it.
I think I've read that Tom Clancy book before.
But, you know, it's... I don't, you know, I guess here's the thing that sort of ties it all together, which the show isn't over, so it's maybe a bad time to tie it all together. No, the interesting thing is, if you think about sort of how's your personal security versus your computer security, and it's like, well, earlier on I might have said my computer wasn't much, it wasn't very secure, but if you really look at it, are you secure anywhere?
Everything is terrible.
And it doesn't mean be afraid. It's just sort of the reality is, though, that some of this stuff could be anywhere. Whether it's in your computer or when you go to a mall or whatever with the various threats, as long as there's somebody who's stupid enough to try it.
Everything is terrible. Sell all your technology. Live in a cave.
On others, hey, speaking of stupid enough to try it.
Hey, or buy it.
Change tone. I try, buy, or fry.
That's a segue right there.
Not other people, and not people who don't agree with your religious or anti-religious philosophy. No, I got a few things. I don't know if you guys have heard about the new Pebble watch that they're unveiling.
Is that the one that was Kickstarted?
You could buy it on Kickstarter.
Bam.
Yeah, they did it on Kickstarter first, which there's an interesting.
The poop out of it.
Basically they announced this new watch that's got a color screen. It's called the Time Watch, which I guess that's semi-clever. It has a color e-paper display and runs a new version of the Pebble operating system with a user interface the company is calling Timeline. It's got a stainless steel body that's 20% thinner than previous Pebbles. Let's see, and it hooks up. It's got a microphone, but right now that doesn't let you, control your phone and stuff, launch apps or any of that. But it will let you, like, record messages to yourself and some of that. Let's see. Starting Tuesday. Yesterday they were set to take pre-orders for Time on Kickstarter, and they hit $1 million on Kickstarter in under an hour.
Yeah, at one point they were dragging about $1,000 a second.
Wow. And it's fascinating because you've got look at the contrast. You've got Apple, which is about to put out the Apple Watch, which I think sort of regardless, long-term, I don't know where the Apple Watch goes, but initially they're going to sell a lot of them.
It goes on your wrist, Peter.
No, I mean as far as where it goes in the market.
Lisa's trying to eat down here, but yeah.
Success. It'll launch as a big success. It'll sell a lot, but then over the long-term, where will the market go with it? Will it, kind of crater, or will it be something that grows, that more people want? And I don't know. I don't think that's really clear yet. But, initially it's going to sell big, except, of course, Apple's sitting on, $60 or $70 billion, and I'm probably wrong and low on that number. It's just interesting to compare and contrast with then Pebble, who are using kind of the internet way to finance it, so that they can do this new product and get going on it using crowdsourcing.
Well, Pebble just basically used Kickstarter as a pre-order program.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, which seems kind of abusive. I mean, the first time around, when they had their first most successful Kickstarter in the history of Kickstarter, they didn't have an established product. But now I get that it's a small company.
All right, for those listening at home, Kickstarter is clear this up because not everybody knows. Kickstarter is
kind of like Indiegogo.
Crowdfunding.
Use something else. Reference something else. They don't know what it is. Kickstarter is what they call a crowdfunding service, where this company basically they get a cut of the money by allowing people to post their project online and say, if we raise this much money, then we will get all the money.
And so, there are rules. You have to have kind of a business plan. And you can't just make stuff up.
So, like, somebody might say, I have this idea for a product that I'd like to build a prototype. I need to raise this much. It's kind of like Shark Tank for the internet.
Yeah, Wall Street for makers, deregulated Wall Street.
Well, the idea, too, is that, you set a goal and everybody contributes, but if they don't meet the goal, then nobody has to pay. So you're signing on to something that you're either going to spend the money if it's successful, or you're not going to spend the money if it's not successful.
Now, does the money go into like an escrow account? Do you pay when you first do it, or do they just debit you later on down the road? So I've gotten Kickstarter stuff before, but I've always done it right about the time they were shipping product.
So you provide them with your method of payment, and they take three or four different payment processors, and then that money is not charged until
they hit the goal and ship.
But presumably,
and then they take their 11%. Is it 11%?
No, Kickstarter takes 5%. I just looked this up the other day, actually.
Kickstarter is the genius, really, because they basically, they're just the man in the middle. They just get money.
They get paid no matter what.
Yeah, and they've got the system. They have the website.
They're like the eBay of ideas.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good. There you go. Give that man a cigar.
There's a great South Park about where the South Park kids wanted to make a startup company that basically did nothing, and they all got money for doing nothing.
Mm.
And it was during the time the Washington Redskins lost the trademark on their name. So look for that.
Okay.
Anyway, right. So that's what Kickstarter is.
Yes. That's
so
what Kickstarter
some
is.
People abuse it. Like there's a guy that has started up a Kickstarter because he wants to build a computer that will calculate pi all the way to the final digit.
Yeah, I wonder if this isn't the jumping the shark of Kickstarter.
Well, no, the jumping the shark of Kickstarter was the I would like to raise money to make potato salad Kickstarter, where the guy, are you not familiar, the potato salad Kickstarter, they ended up raising something ridiculous like $65,000 for a dude to go make potato salad.
I think
salad.
That's a clever hack. I think that's still on the upswing, like, good for him.
Yeah, that's true. Thing. He did get a big giant check.
Although, because people knew exactly what they were giving him money
that's
to
true.
Do.
That's true. He wasn't like,
you know, it was
wasn't
like
doing a
it was an eyes wide open.
One other qualifier on Kickstarter is what the person who is the company or the person or the group that is hosting the Kickstarter, when they have the idea, what they do is they offer, kind of like when we're doing a fund drive, they offer incentives for you to donate a certain amount of money. So like if, let's say you're there was a Kickstarter to create this widget. We need money to create a widget. And if you donate, you'll get this amount of money.
Like $5, thanks for your help. Yeah, you don't get anything.
$100, you get a signed widget when it's produced. We'll give you one.
$200, you get two of them in a pre-production, one in a T-shirt. You
right,
know, something
that
like
kind
that.
Of
yeah.
thing. So there's incentive for people to donate, but it's also a way of building enthusiasm for an idea. So yeah. going
there's
back
some hilarious stories also of people who put up their Kickstarters and wanted like $10,000 or $20,000 to make some T-shirts or some like gaming dice or something. And it like went way beyond their wildest imagination. I mean, they wanted to get like maybe enough that they could have 100 orders, and they got 7,000 orders.
Then you have a whole other problem.
Yeah, and it's these people like don't know what to do, and they don't know how to gear up for
it. The original Pebble Watch is one of those cases where they were going for like, we need like $100,000, and they got like $4 million or something ridiculous. They got, you know, not just 10 or 20 times the orders they were expecting. They got like 1,000 times the orders they were expecting. So this is for their first watch, the Pebble Watch, the first time around. So now you would think they're kind of an established, they're still a small company, but they're an established company. They have a product that you can go buy right now, the original Pebble Watch, and they also have a second one, the Pebble Steel or whatever it's called, because it's made of metal, not steel like Steeler's watch.
Not five-finger discount.
Right, not steel because it is made of. But so now to make their new watch, the time that Peter was talking about, they have done a second Kickstarter, wildly successful Kickstarter. They've got millions pledged, $5-6 million.
They got like
right
a
now.
Million in an hour.
Yeah, Peter,
I think.
Peter said, congratulations for listening to what Peter was saying. But yeah, they did. And so the question that I had, though, was like, is this really ethical? Because it's one thing if you're a startup, you have no product, you want to kickstart your product with some, you know, that's kind of the
venture
advantage
capital.
Here. You front load your company with money so that you've got, you know, the ability. So you don't have to go out and get VC. You are pre-funded for presumably your initial run of manufacturing. And then once everything or your initial, if you're developing an application that you're kickstarting, you've like basically prepaid your salary for the year while you go develop, you know, whatever. This company's not in that situation. They just apparently
they cheaped out of hiring web developers to build an e-commerce platform.
Yeah, they just wanted to play the pre-order game again and get pre-funded. And I mean, ultimately,
and play
really
on the Kickstarter success they had before as a marketing thing, I think, you know.
Ultimately, I think they're just kind of robbing themselves. They're cutting the bottom of the blanket off and putting it at the top of the blanket and being like, check out this new longer blanket we've got. But, you know, still, it just seems skeevy. And, you know, I guess I'm going to betray my not terribly uber super geekiness, and I don't particularly care for the Pebble Watch in the first place, so, you know, whatever.
You just betrayed your suburban origins by saying skeevy.
I am a child of the suburbs.
The main things on the Pebble Watch, just to put it out there, is that apparently it will have a 7-day battery life, which there's no estimate on the Apple Watch's battery life that comes anywhere close to that.
No, but every other smartwatch I've tried has had.
Are they
like
doing OLED?
7-hour battery life.
Yeah, what are they doing?
It's the e-paper. It's an e-paper, color e-paper okay. display.
But that's probably assuming X amount of changes, X amount of refreshes, right? For that long of a link the battery.
Well, the Pebble and Steel watches have been out, and so I haven't seen anybody saying that they're not up to that 7-day life with what they're doing. Then they claim that the color one will have the same life. The other thing that the Pebble does is it's not tied to Android or iOS specifically. It can work with either. Just as a, you know, since most of the other smartwatches that are coming out are closer tied to one platform or the other. But so I don't know. It's cheaper. If you did it on Kickstarter, it was $159, and they're going to sell it for $199, which is almost half the, basically the $159 is less than half the price of an Apple Watch. So they can sort of compete on that front, but,
I don't want one.
clearly there's a number of people who do want them, but I haven't seen one. The part of the tough part I think for them is I haven't seen one in person.
Pebble or the color Pebble.
I haven't seen a Pebble. Well, the color Pebble, obviously it's not out yet, but I haven't seen the regular Pebble. I haven't noticed anybody who's had one.
Yeah, but there's a guy at work that has one. Where I work.
What did Dwight have for a little bit? Did he have a Pebble?
I think he just had a real like Pebble, like from
an actual Pebble in his rock
from the river.
I got some rocks.
Pictures of cats.
So maybe that one's not so big, but or such a hit. Next thing is Google Wallet. There's a new competitor to, I guess, or an expansion of that competitor to Apple's payment. Apparently they signed a partnership with SoftCard. Google signed a partnership with SoftCard, and later this year, Google Wallet with tap and pay functionality will come pre-installed on Android smartphones from Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile.
So what is it?
And apparently,
with?
They supposedly have purchased some exciting technology and intellectual property from SoftCard to make Google Wallet better. It will be on Android phones running KitKat and above. So I guess basically Google saw what Apple Pay was doing. Samsung has bought Loop Pay, and
because what we need more than anything else is more mobile pay fragmentation. That's what we need, absolutely.
Loop Pay tortilla.
So is Google Wallet like an NFC payment system?
Yes.
Okay. Does it work with already existing?
Yeah, well,
near
there
NFC
are just a few places
systems?
That you can use it. In Houston, there aren't that many that I found, but it's been around for a while. But everyone's still fighting it out to see who's going to have the prevailing technology.
This is
I think Apple. That's one of the things they learned. They understood is to work with. They seem to know how to get in with the vendors, or like with iTunes, that like they did with music, they seem to figure out who the right people are to talk to have a better chance to succeed. Instead of just putting the technology out there and hoping everybody thinks it's so great,
like
that they'll
Starbucks.
Adopt it.
Yeah. Well, you know, Starbucks has kind of their own game.
They do.
Ported by all of these places.
Yeah. Google, it looks like Google acquired ISIS, too, by leaning up to this. ISIS Mobile, formerly known. They had the good sense to change their name. ISIS Mobile is now known as, who are they known as? SoftCard.
SoftCard. Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah,
SoftCard
sounds a lot more
PC. I remember when they
PC
were
going to
change their name. But it was funny because about the time they said, yeah, we're changing our name, ISIS changed their name. You know, everybody started calling them ISIL.
And then they became
some Islamic State or something. They've changed their name a few times. It's a branding thing, I guess.
Yeah. So you should know this. Has Archer changed their name
have.
To ISIS?
Yeah,
did they acknowledge
they're
changing it in?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
No, they just segued into them working for the CIA.
I read a thing from the Archer creators, not to dig too deeply into Archer, but they said basically they knew they had to change it because of ISIS. But they wanted the show kind of, if you watch Archer, the show takes place in sort of that weird out of time where it's like the cars are from the 70s, the outfits are from the 60s, the Cold War is from the 80s, and like it's sort of this weird out of time era. And they said they didn't really want to like comment on on ISIS, the terror group ISIS, because that would sort of place
the
show in time.
An anachronism, yeah.
They wanted to just sort of let the show keep its innocence and its out of time nature. So, like, yeah, they just sort of retired it because in the show they're now like just a subsidiary of the CIA.
I'm almost
way worse than ISIS.
Yeah, they let the show keep its innocence. They shut down ISIS, and then they were dealing cocaine in Central America.
Yeah,
no,
well,
spoilers.
You know.
No spoilers.
No spoilers. That was last season, actually.
I haven't gotten there.
Yeah, I've only seen season one.
Don't worry.
Oh, well, keep watching.
Phrasing. All right.
In a props, Jay.
And and one, you know, one.
You're not my supervisor!
There
not,
it is.
Not enough info for a try, buy, or fry on it, but it is coming, and so it's a new product. So apparently Google is going to come out with a new Pixel Chrome. They're like ultra, not really for the general public Chromebook, so it'll be interesting to see what features. It seems to be sort of a proof of concept of a higher-powered Chrome-based device.
Would you say it's in the Chrome? The danger Chrome!
So it'll be interesting to see what they do with
sir.
It. It's kind of the ultimate version of something that most people will want to pay about $300 or less to get a device.
It's four and times that much.
It was $1,200, $1,300 for the last one. But then finally, this one, I think it's one of those where this could either be just really cool or really stupid. So we'll leave it to the panel. But a company called Satechi, and they have their Bluetooth buttons.
Yeah, I'm thinking
and
stupid.
By that, they're these little devices that are, I don't know, they look like they're, say, about the size of a quarter or maybe a little larger. And what it is they have specific functions, and you pair them with your device, and then they're basically sort of remote buttons,
How do you spell it?
For your smart device. Available in home button, media control, that means like volume, you know, up, down, play, pause, fast, you know, forward, and rewind.
Peter, spell Satechi.
Spell this. What is this company called?
Satechi, S-A-T-E-C-H-I.
S-A-T-E-C-H-I. Okay, all right.
Allow you to remotely activate
buttons?
Siri, Google Now, control your music, and snap photos. The camera button, I could see where then that would let you control your smartphone so you do your selfies from an even farther distance. You can do that all without needing to touch / stare at your phone or tablet. They're about $25 a piece. So, you know, if you think about it, like if you want to keep your phone in your pocket, but you at your desk, you want to be able to control your music.
But snap a selfie.
You could, take a selfie inside your pocket or remotely. No,
let's not call this selfie, Peter.
Inside your pocket, not inside your pants.
You snap that.
Say that.
I don't know about the panel, but I declare this stupid.
I can say the one use I would use for this is like, you know, when I misplace my cell phone, if I could hit a button and have it programmed where it would ring. It's really what it is. It's just a Bluetooth. It's a Bluetooth remote control for your mobile phone. But Bluetooth doesn't go as far as I would probably be away from my phone, so this wouldn't really help me out.
What, 30 meters, isn't it? In 30 meters, the range
Give me 2 minutes, I can get more than... No, 30 meters in Bluetooth, that's on a really, really good day. Bluetooth is more close to like maybe 10 meters, 30 feet if you're lucky. Really... Okay. 2 or 3
What's
meters.
What's this metric crap we're talking here?
I think that's remembering what I read in the spec.
It's about 3 stones throw.
14 rods.
I'd say Bill Nye would be proud of y'all for using the metric system.
Bill Nye.
Okay, now I'm going back to standard.
Womp womp.
All right,
yeah,
so now
that was dumb.
Fry. Dumb.
No, sir.
Oh, only
$25. Like
that's the kind of like throwaway.
How much is
you
it?
Know, I could see.
Try buy or not.
They're $25 to $30. The
if
thing
it was
I
like
could
a,
see is,
a
the thing $4.99. I could see with it is at work. You know, if you use your phone with like a Bluetooth speaker, you can leave your phone in your pocket and have the music control and just have that button sitting on your desk pause your music.
I tell you what, I would like at the Geek Gathering, Barrett to bring a soldering iron and some Bluetooth controllers and just make some buttons like this for us, and then we could all have them.
Yeah.
Awesome.
That's the thing. If this was like, this would be like an impulse purchase for me if it was like half the price and it was, you know, at the aisle on the way out of Fry's or
on
the way out of
Micro Center. How big are the buttons?
I'm guessing
they look to me to be maybe they're around the size of a quarter or 50 cent piece.
Need a banana for scale.
So like a
silver dollar.
Yeah, about, yeah.
What kind of silver dollar? Like a Susan B. Anthony dollar?
No, a real silver dollar. We're not talking about like the modern dollars.
Like a Sacagawea dollar?
No, that's not modern either.
It's not silver either.
A Liberty silver dollar?
A Liberty dollar.
Yeah.
Liberty head
Man
or whatever.
Shot yeah, Liberty the
walking Liberty silver dollar.
Yeah, y'all are just making stuff up.
Okay, and also they've got a couple of pictures of it, you know, someone putting it on their steering wheel to be able to, you know, control, I guess, you know, their cell phone volume. But a lot of that, you know, you've
got
integrated stuff. It's built into the car.
But it's this big.
Yeah.
That's a big button.
I thought
they were like, you know, small buttons you could, yeah.
Well, you can't push it.
So on your shirt?
Like just like a little clicker.
There's a certain minimum ergonomic button size.
So this all this cool embedded stuff and cool wireless stuff and cool Bluetooth stuff. Germany, who I guess has had a lot of really ugly transgressions in the past, yesterday or the day before, they blocked a patent.
Sounds like a whitewash to me.
You were just trying to avoid hitting Godwin's law like
yeah,
I did.
I'm just dancing around all this kind of
That's
stuff.
Some questionable.
Wink.
You know, they don't have the best track record for not killing people, I guess is what I'm trying to say here. So their patent office...
Oh, that noise you hear is the thin ice crack.
Their patent office refused to. So someone actually, with the whole maker movement, someone actually in the patent office refused to patent a device. More or less, it was a really small microcontroller with a GPRS modem on there and a cyanide capsule. And the idea is you implant this in people to track people. Or they were saying, I think they were pitching it as you implant these into criminals. And then you've got a GPS chip in there, and you've got a cell phone. And if they go outside,
like a Rutger Hauer movie.
Yeah, if they go outside of a certain area, you can just remotely kill them.
I think it was called Deadlock.
Somebody actually tried to patent.
Yeah,
this
they tried. Yeah, it actually went through the patent office in Germany, and Germany said, "No, we're not going to patent that because that's just not good."
That's
there were
terrible.
This. There were
that's
this.
Literally terrible.
There were the Sandmen.
Even we have our limits.
Yeah,
and
like,
you had a light in your palm, and when you turned 25, you died.
Carousel.
Run, Logan.
Wow.
He's going to Rome.
I'm going to go pizza.
And I think this also leads into the big thing, whereas I think is the UN and everyone is starting to talk about banning robots that kill people. So it's, you know, it's the first time. I know,
well,
this is all
where's
a slippery
the fun
slope
in that?
Here, I know.
If I can't have a robot that kills people, I don't want to have a robot at all.
Do they have a robot that kills people that they can currently ban?
Well, no, that's the thing. This is one of the first times in history where they've actually started, you know, passing laws about technology that does not yet exist. You know, they came in and they said, you know, hey, no mustard gas after, you know, it had been used in World War I. They came in, they said, hey, I'll, you know, don't do this
no,
after they've already used it.
Somewhere in
yeah.
Dr. Krieger's
so
lab.
So now they're kind of getting a little bit ahead of themselves, I think.
And also, doomsday devices are illegal, and so is lying.
Look,
well, you know,
you guys are just
robots,
taking all the
robots
fun out of robot
kill.
Ownership here. You are
robots
you are killing
kill people,
my
except
illusion.
Robots that are robots that kill.
Speaking
people.
Of robots that kill, have you seen the trailers for the new Terminator movie?
Yes, yes, I have. Although I tell you what really deflated my sales about the new movie
is that
I
fact
saw
going to have Arnold Schwarzenegger.
No.
Is he CGI or is that really him?
No,
heavily makeup.
Well,
but robots aren't supposed to age.
It looks well. So okay, look.
Heavily makeup.
Spoilers.
Then.
We don't want to get into the spoilers for the movie. But what
he's got old grease in his
what
hair.
What really killed me about that was the there were. It hasn't been completely confirmed yet, but the producer, several of the actors, and the director are about 99% sure that the movie is going to get slapped with a PG-13 rating.
Which is
are
bad.
They not aiming
which
for
is,
that?
No, they were sort of told to sort of aim for that, and that's going to kill any interest in having a in me seeing the movie because it's not going to be any good. It's going to be all boulderized and watered.
So you
down.
you wanted the R, you wanted not the.
Yes,
I
okay.
would like you know every so Terminator.
They've always
rated
been R.
R.
I remember not
Terminator
being able to see
2
that when I wanted to
when
I was
rated
a kid.
R. Terminator Salvation. Not rated R. Look what happened with that. That was a PG-13 movie, and this is going to be a PG-13 movie.
Is this New Line, or is this Disney, or who's actually making this
one? I don't know. I know the original
one
was Carol.
So is the guy who is directing this one, is he the guy that directed Cherry 2000? Or was that 3000?
I don't know. The Schwarzenegger scenes that I've seen in the preview kind of reminded me of the new Raiders movie.
Look, Arnold got to get paid just like everybody else.
StopKillerRobots.org is down. That may be an indicator.
Who is doing? Oh, Paramount's doing it. Okay, yeah, that Skydance Productions and Paramount. Because I know Paramount, the original ones were Carolco and Orion, maybe like a bunch of companies that have long since folded and don't make no movies anymore. But yeah, new one's Paramount. Yeah, so I mean, it's depressing that it's going to be a PG-13 film. It means it's going to be weak and watered down, and that just makes me sad. But the trailers were neat looking.
What the heck is going on?
Noise.
That's where you got to put the robots.
The killer robots are here.
Machine uprising at KPFT. Please send help.
So when is Judgment Day? There was the 2003 date, 2005, 2011.
The original one was August 29th, 1997. August 29th, 1997 was the original one, and I believe in Terminator 3.
Keep getting rebooted, yeah.
In Terminator 3, they changed it. Because it was past that.
Well,
it's
because they messed with the timeline
when they
went back.
And then in the Sarah Connor Chronicles, I know they changed it a couple
April
of times.
So it was April 21st, 2011. It was July 25th, 2004. I thought they bumped it into the future again, but I'm not finding this
online
anywhere.
In Terminator Genesis, that's the new movie, is Terminator Genesis in 2015. And this is all information from the trailer, so this is not spoiling anything. They are screwing with the timeline yet again because the...
But you're saying we came back and we fixed
it,
right?
Yeah, the trailer opens with... very well done shot-for-shot recreation of several components of the Terminator movie with, you know, Kyle Reese in the sporting goods store and appearing from the time thing. And then Emilia Clarke Duncan, I believe that's her name, or Emilia Clarke, who plays Daenerys in the Game of Thrones TV series, is Sarah Connor. She busts in the side of the store, and she's the one who drops the "come with me if you want to live" line. So now she's the one who's saving the future, and yeah, the timeline has been like further screwed up from where it's been before, and I don't know, it'll be interesting. I know I talk a big game, I'll be there to see it, but I'll be sad that it's not going to be rated R and, you know, the movie that it could have been.
So which one is Daenerys? I'm not
she's the blonde dragon girl.
Dragon queen.
Oh, okay, the desert lady that speaks. Okay, gotcha.
And
she's going to be in the new Terminator movie.
She is Sarah
she's
Connor.
She's tiny. She's Sarah Connor.
If you watch that trailer, she is like channeling Linda Hamilton.
Really?
When I saw the trailer the first time, I couldn't place her. I was like, who is that? Because
she's British too,
like
isn't
young
she?
Linda Hamilton. Yeah, she is.
Okay.
But yeah, watch the trailer, Terminator Genisys. It's spelled in a stupid fashion. It's G-E-N-I-S-Y-S for some stupid reason.
Genesis.
It's probably
yeah.
the company.
But yeah, if you go to that's Cyberdyne. Anyway, go to YouTube.
It's
look,
a new
watch
company.
The trailer.
They had to recharter. Innatech was taken.
It does look like
Superfish was taken.
Yeah,
Cyberdyne failed with Radio Shack.
Yeah. Well, that's not even funny.
The other franchise that is getting new life this year is Alien.
That is correct. So Neil Blomkamp, the creator director behind District 9 and Chappie.
I was about to say that's coming out next Friday.
Honestly, Chappie.
Yeah.
So anyway, they're going to ignore Alien 3 and Resurrection.
That's good. You know, we could do a whole show talking about Aliens.
What about
Prometheus?
Prometheus
is still Prometheus 2 is still in work, and Prometheus is sort of
it's still a prequel, right?
Yeah.
And from what I was reading, Ridley Scott is actually producing, set to produce this untitled Blomkamp Alien movie. So there'll be that tie-in with the mythos that way. But Blomkamp had posted on Instagram a bunch of concept art that he had just commissioned just because he really wanted to do an Aliens movie at some point. It was just absolutely beautiful concept art with aged up versions of Sigourney Weaver as Ripley.
And
Michael
Sigourney
Bean
Weaver's
Hicks.
Going to be in the new
Sigourney
movie.
Sigourney Weaver's going to be in it. Hopefully they'll get Michael Bean to reprise Hicks. It has the possibility. Now at this point, there's no script. There has been a deal signed, but like that's literally it.
Now who's directing?
Neil Blomkamp.
Okay.
He's directing, producing, and potentially probably writing as well. But we have no script, nothing but a bare deal, but really high hopes. That's a franchise that's just been neglected and pooped on since 1997 when Alien Resurrection came out, and it's my favorite set of movies ever. And I desperately hope they do it right. That would be really good. Alien 3 is a whole side story. That's a movie with a tortured development history, and really, the miraculous thing about Alien 3 is that it hung together as well as it did, considering how screwed up its development was. But not a great film. Alien Resurrection, a terrible film. Mm-hmm. Alien vs. Predator, not even in the same universe. Not even count.
That should have gone straight to video game.
Yeah.
Well, You know, my story about Alien was I saw it in the theater in 1979.
Scary.
It was, and I, you know, being the loner I was.
And you had hair then, and then not anymore after
I didn't get to go see it with anybody. I just went to go see it.
Did you know what you're getting into? Or like, what? How were you sold on this film?
All
like,
yeah, what did you know going in? I love these
all he
kinds
knew
of
that was in space, no one could hear him scream.
I knew nothing going in.
You knew that it was, this is a space movie.
This is a space
movie. It's
probably
going to be scary.
It might be scary, but I didn't really take it as a horror film because it wasn't really presented. I mean, they said no one can hear you scream.
No,
but
you see the opening, and it's not the trailer doesn't really give you a good idea of what the movie's going to be about.
Well, movie trailers
I don't think
were different.
The original movie,
but the
original
but
trailer,
but,
just the egg cracking, right?
Right.
The date.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So it was a space movie, and it was those days they didn't have previews that basically telling you the whole movie before you went and see it. It's just like it's space. No one can hear you scream. Little darkness. Little mood music. And okay, let's go see this thing.
This might be a fun afternoon.
Be a good day to go. I went to go see it at night. And
good job.
And the wonderful thing about 1978. No. I was going to say I was driving a 1974 75 Chevy Chevelle. Was my car
as many people had
and much like regular cars these days, you know, they have headrests. Well, the headrest in this Chevy Chevelle is that kind of shape of, you know, the
alien head shape.
So after seeing the movie and then the dark getting into my car, and look to my right, I scared the
bejesus man.
Out of
so
me.
Did you? What did you do when the alien busted out of spoilers.
He had to have his reupholstery. He had to have his upholstery right on.
Of the milkman.
What was the actor's name?
No spoilers. Oh, no.
John Hurt. What'd you do when old John Hurt, when Kane flopped over on the table and started making his noises?
I giggled like a schoolgirl.
Yeah, I saw that. I remember I was pretty young when
did
that came out.
Your
I remember
subscription to Fangoria the
well,
next
you
day.
Know, because that was coming, you know, not very many years after the high of having seen Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Like, you know,
and that was a total reversal. That you went from feel good, epic, you know, shoot 'em up, wow,
well,
to
there was a sense, at least at that time, that there was a change in how movies were being made, because space movies were always about, like, you could see the string, you could see the wobbling as it flew by. But so there was huge hope for cinematic productions.
I was going to say, I remember being scared of that when the alien first popped out of the chest and hopped around. I remember being scared when I was a kid, but I just, a weird space-time hiccup, I saw that clip about a week ago on YouTube, and it looks cute, like a Muppet now. It's kind of laughable. It's like, it's just like the way they make it bounce.
But when you saw the clip, was it wearing a top hat and a cane?
I'm
going to
find that again.
Alien is actually a really complicated movie. It's got reversal of gender roles. It's a very 70s film,
like a Hitchcock,
with its presentation
space
of
horror
of amoral corporatism run rampant. And we can talk about Alien. I'm prepared to talk about Alien for as long as you want to talk about Alien. But
well, I was going to one other thing I wanted to say about Alien, which was interesting to me, is it was, you know, I still read somewhat, but I was a voracious reader in my youth. And when the movie came out, there was opportunity to get the book.
The novelization by Alan Dean Foster.
Right. And in the book, which was pretty much followed exactly the movie storyline, there was not much deviation, but there were two scenes in the book that were left out of the movie. And one of them was when Sigourney Weaver found the first guy who went to Brett went looking for the alien. He was killed, and they lost contact with him. In the book, she finds him.
And Dallas is there.
Yes.
Tom Skerritt's character, Dallas, is there.
And she finds him still alive, and he says, kill me, which is your first hint that this is not an alien that's just running around killing people. It's got a bigger agenda.
It's doing stuff.
And then the other scene that they left out that was in the book that really made the story was the cyborg, the android guy.
Ash.
Mm-hmm. In the movie, you don't know that he's working for the bad guys till much later. But in the book, he kind of tips his hand when they almost get the alien into an airlock, and he has to like sound the alarm to scare the alien out of the airlock.
They started filming that scene, actually. It's on the Blu-rays and DVDs. Parts of it, the parts that they filmed, and they didn't.
But they're
going
to revisit at least the Brett character in. They're talking about in the new movie.
Interesting.
So they might visit upon that a little bit more.
Look, I'm there. I'm there, man. I'll be there opening day.
I'm sure that'll probably have an R rating.
Yeah. Neil Blomkamp, if you look at District 9 and Elysium, he's not really the kind of guy who makes child-friendly movies, so there'll be probably lots of squirting goopiness all over.
Maybe he'll get the Jim Henson Company. He'll get the Jim Henson Company do the Aliens.
No, they'll probably get like Weta Digital or something.
Dark alien crystals.
I'm thinking it'll be sort of like Return of the Jedi.
That movie is scary, man.
Dark Crystal?
Talk about Dark Crystal. Alien and Dark Crystal are the two movies that like warped me as a child.
Dark Crystal was done really well, I think.
That was
Jim Henson.
Yeah.
That was like Jim Henson in full on like. Let's put the kid stuff aside and hit the acid real hard and see what comes out.
Wasn't being is Jim Henson getting to do what he wanted to do, getting to be Jim Henson for the most part, which was pretty awesome. Yeah.
Now, I pestered my parents into letting me see Alien on videotape when I was probably 10 years old. Oh, man. Well,
it's just like Labyrinth. That stuff when you see David Bowie, that's pretty disturbing.
Certain parts of David Bowie are very disturbing. I like the hair. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about anything not in the hair region on his head.
I feel like I've got some Googling to do.
Rescue me.
You ever see The Man Who Fell to Earth? Unwatchable. David Bowie. Yeah.
I respect David Bowie as an artist, but most of his movie stuff is just absolutely unwatchable because I haven't done that many drugs. I just can't. I'm not there.
Not for lack of trying.
I'm just not there.
Next time you fly to Germany, try watching it.
You should do that.
Well, since we're coming to the end of the show and we're wrapping up anyway, is there anything else on the Hollywood horizon that we need to be aware of as nerds and geeks?
Oh, the Alien thing was the big news. That is a big deal.
Well, 2016 is a big or 2015 is a big year for movies that are going to come out, right? I mean, we've got the new Avengers movies coming. What is it? Next year is the Star Wars movie.
Is it not? It's this
Wars,
year, isn't it?
Yeah,
Star Wars is the end of 2015.
Yeah.
I can't take another year waiting for that.
Well, I was worried I wasn't going to live.
You know, Netflix has a Daredevil series coming out. They're going to release all of it at once.
They're going to have Ben Affleck in it?
No. It's mostly unknown people. However, the guy that's playing Kingpin is Vincent D'Onofrio.
D'Onofrio.
Yeah, he's playing Kingpin, and I saw a picture of him. He looks like he might be a pretty good Kingpin, but it's the early days of Daredevil. He's not going to be wearing the iconic red suit. It's based on Frank Miller's early years of Daredevil where he's...
That sounds good.
Anyway, it looks like it might actually be really good. I'm not a huge fan of the Daredevil franchise, but it looks like it might be good.
Isn't the Superman-Batman movie coming out this year? With the one that does have Ben Affleck in it?
I don't know. I know they're making that one.
Mad
the
Max.
One with Sad Batman.
Oh, Mad Max,
Mad Max is coming out Fury
Road.
Those
Mad Max trailer.
Jurassic World,
nice.
Which could go
Jurassic
either way.
World, which could go probably the.
You know, I've actually never watched any of those.
I didn't see that. I saw that there was a trailer for Ant-Man, but I didn't see the trailer for Ant-Man.
They're doing Man from U.N.C.L.E.
That looks good. It's stylized in the 60s. The guy who played
Martian.
The guy what?
I'm sorry, I was reacting to Lee.
Yeah, I was pointing at Barrett's screen.
The guy who played the Japanese name character in Man from U.N.C.L.E., I can't remember his name.
Don't even try.
He's not. There's not going to be campy cameos, it doesn't look like, from the original stars. But watch the preview for that. It looks really good.
And then Andy Weir's The Martian is coming out. I've loved the book. I interviewed the author. He was awesome. That's going to be an amazing movie. That's a Ridley Scott film. It's got Matt Damon in it. Be cool.
Jurassic World and Jurassic City both coming out.
The one we're all waiting for is December 4th, 2015, Krampus.
Jay, you made a movie?
I love Krampus. Yeah.
Oh, I think with that,
I think we should make our own movie.
Yeah. All right. So that is the sound of the show coming to a grinding halt.
It's Krampusing out.
Krampus out.
I need a Midol.
Well, we're glad you joined us for this episode of Technology Bites. We're going to be back next Wednesday night live. You can always catch us on the podcast at geekradio.com. Be sure and check that out. Geek Gathering a week from Friday. We hope you'll think about coming out and hanging out with us. We're going to get out of here now. You've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's...
Groovehouse.
Groovehouse.
For the month of February, 90.1 KPFT has been selected as one of the local nonprofits competing for your vote at Okra Charity Saloon in downtown Houston. The concept is simple. For each drink purchased, guests receive one vote that they may cast that night for their favorite organization. The charity with the most votes at the end of the month receives the next month's proceeds. Okra is located at 924 Congress, near the corner of Main Street and Congress. Again, throughout the month of February, KPFT is one of the candidates for support. You can chip in to vote with the purchase when you patronize Okra. You can visit Okra on Congress anytime in February to cast a vote for KPFT. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide. You can make a difference by donating something, whether it's moving or not, an old car, RV, motorcycle, tractor, or boat, to KPFT's vehicle donation program. Whether we played your favorite song or helped you discover your new favorites, you listen because you enjoy KPFT's unique mix of sounds. Just call 1-855-KPFT-CAR or visit kpft.org to help now. Your tax-deductible donation before the new year gets you a KPFT membership and makes such a difference at a station that is the heart and soul of our community. So, just move to the phone and call 1-855-KPFT-CAR or visit kpft.org, and we'll make it easy to donate to the nonprofit radio station that you love. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.